Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. When it comes to your teeth, the regular schedule of brushing and flossing is important to keep them in good shape until old age. The habit starts when you're young, and recently KRMG's Russell Mills talked with Dr. Joe Castellano about how important it is to take your child to the dentist.
We are here to talk about pediatric dentistry, which I guess you know a little bit about because you're the president of the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry. So one would imagine you know your stuff. And, you know, it is tough to get your 2-year-old, 4-year-old, whatever, to brush their teeth. I guess at 2, you're helping them. By 4, you're kind of hoping they do it themselves. But are parents actually spending enough time and making sure that that's actually happening, do you think?
We had a survey that was conducted, and you know, they showed that 96% of the parents thought that oral health was important, but about 75% of them didn't take their child to the pediatric dentist by their first birthday, and about 1/3 of them didn't think dental pain was an important issue. But one of the things it did find was that the millennials were at least 30% likely to get their child to the dentist by age 1. So the millennials are out there really working to get their kids to the dentist early. And it's very important. It just allows us to establish a home base for that child and to educate them and to, you know, show the parents what they should and shouldn't be doing as their child gets older.
Okay, so the recommendation is that you have your child visit their dentist by the age of 1 year. You know, I will tell you, I'm an older guy. That did not happen when I was a kid. Why is that so important? Because a lot of kids don't even have a whole lot of teeth at 1.
Well, it's all about establishing the relationship. You know, I know as a kid, I went early. I don't think it was that early, but it's establishing a relationship with the parents, and it's also beginning the education process. We found that if we get them in early, we are able to do the things and prepare the parents and educate the parents and actually teach the children the proper habits to avoid dental decay in the future. And, you know, years ago it used to be 3 years of age, and by the time they came in at 3 years of age, the kids were full of cavities. So, you know, moving it to age 1 that we've done for the last quite a few years has really paid off, and we see a lot of kids getting through childhood now without cavities.
Is there any benefit as far as just, you know, being afraid of going to the dentist? Is there any benefit to, you know, having a kid used to going to the dentist from that age, like before they can even remember, so that by the time they are 10 or 12 or whatever, they feel comfortable going there?
Absolutely. You know, the relationship, when the kids come in early, we're able to start a relationship. You know, most of the time they don't really have any significant issues. So it becomes a fun time, and the child gets used to the office, and they enjoy their visit, and we get to play with them and have fun. And then they get to come back, you know, 6 months later and do it again. So over time they get used to the office and the setting, and they know it's a non-threatening environment. And so, you know, it's really beneficial to us. And then as the child goes on, they don't have the fear of the dentist, and they continue those regular checkups through childhood and into adulthood.
And I got to imagine, you know, if you start your dentist visits at the age of 1 and never get cavities, it's going to help you never develop fear if you never have to have the drill, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's part of it. But, you know, in the relationship, if for some reason they did end up with a small cavity, they're used to us. They're not afraid, and you know, we could talk them through the procedures, and we catch things very early. And so, you know, there's really nothing to fear.
And I think that the practice of pain-free dentistry has advanced significantly in recent years. Would you agree?
I would agree that, you know, our technology, our the way we work has just changed from the old days. I used to listen to my dad's stories, and, you know, way different than back then.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So there's got to be some tips or some ideas on how to help prevent cavities. Obviously, brushing your teeth, you know, the flossing, that kind of stuff. What about a mouthwash? And are there certain foods that parents should avoid?
Absolutely. So let's start with the brushing. You know, we recommend that children brush their teeth in the morning and at night, 2 times a day for 2 minutes. You know, use a fluoridated toothpaste and get your children cleaning those teeth. As far as mouthwashes, I would probably hold off till the child is old enough to be able to spit correctly. Usually 5 years old, 6 years old, they're able to spit and not swallow the mouthwash. When you're using mouthwashes with the older kids, it's probably good to look for one without alcohol, without an alcohol base in it. Sometimes it tends to burn their mouth or they don't like it, and they make plenty of them for kids that don't have that alcohol component in it. All of those are adjuncts to taking care of the teeth, but really the most important is to make sure that you brush 2 times a day for 2 minutes.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the kind of foods, because I'm sure that the kind of snacks that you give your children can have an effect on dental health, on oral health generally.
Oh, definitely. You know, we tend to think that, you know, fruit roll-ups, granola bars, fruit pouches are great because they've got fruit in them. But what parents really need to look at is the consistency of the food and the amount of sugar in it. We want to avoid foods that are very sticky, that are have high concentrations of sugar, which those snacks tend to have. They tend to stick onto the teeth longer. The teeth are exposed to the sugar longer, and then it increases their risk of decay. Things like fresh fruits or fresh vegetables and cheese are great snacks because they don't stick to the teeth a long time, and they also help create saliva, which washes away any acid that is building up and reduces the chance of decay.
Okay, so that gives us a little bit to chew on. Aha, see what I did there? I know, that was terrible. All right, you mentioned that there's a survey. Is that something that's just been done or something that's coming up?
It was something that was done, and I touched on it in the beginning of the talk. And, you know, we surveyed a bunch of parents and found, you know, we found out that about 95% of them were interested in their children's oral health and felt it was important. But we still found the gap there where 75% didn't take their child to the dentist by age one, and that a third of them didn't really think that dental pain was a serious issue. So, you know, we need to get that message out. We need to let the parents know that those teeth matter. They need to brush them, and they need to get into the office so that we can prevent anything from occurring as the child ages.
Okay, so let's go back to talk about those really young children. You know, they're going to tooth. There's going to be teething pain. We all went through that. Uh-huh. If you've raised kids, you've been through it again. If you've had grandkids, well, there's your third round. But I guess my question is, you know, is it a big deal? Is it something we should be concerned about? Because it seems like it's just kind of par for the course.
You know, teething pain is, you know, that type of discomfort is something that some kids will routinely experience. And, you know, it's more on the normal side. You know, if it's extended or prolonged or the kid already has all their teeth, then it could be a sign of something that's more serious, you know, a large cavity, an infection, an abscess. So don't just take the fact that, you know, they have tooth pain for granted. It could be indicating a serious problem. And, you know, if you're unsure about it, definitely get to your pediatric dentist so it can get evaluated and make sure that it is nothing serious.
And one story that I have done previously is how dental health, or perhaps a better way to put it, a lack of dental health can lead to systemic failure. I mean, it can be literally deadly if your teeth get too bad. True?
That's correct. You know, the bacteria in the mouth, they're present there, and, you know, the decay can eventually lead to infections and abscesses, which at some point can become systemic. So, you know, it can lead to it. Thank God it doesn't happen very often, but it can be the end result of not caring for your teeth and leaving an abscess or an infection unattended.
Yep. I saw a story about I think it was a heart failure that they eventually figured out that's what it was, you know, it was a tooth infection that started all that. All right, so I'm going to ask you to tackle one of the great issues of all time. At what point do we pull the pacifier out of the kid's mouth or the thumb? Or, for that matter, should we even allow a pacifier with the little ones? Does it hurt their teeth at all?
A lot of the young ones, I would probably say a year and under, maybe up to 18 months, really sometimes rely on that pacifier just for a soothing, calming effect. But once they get to about 18 months of age, we recommend that they stop the pacifier thumb habit, and the parents need to start working on it. If they continue for extended periods of time, they can end up with crooked teeth or bite issues, and then eventually later on, you know, maybe needing braces or some type of orthodontic care. So, you know, breaking that habit around 18 months and getting the child off of that is what we recommend to avoid those issues later on.
Dr. Joe Castellano, president of the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry. February is Heart Month. Nearly half of U.S. adults have some type of heart or blood vessel disease, according to a new report from the American Heart Association. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked with Andrea Clemis about how much people actually know about the disease.
We are on with Dr. Andrea Clemis. She's with an organization called MDVIP. This is a national organization, correct, of physicians who basically sort of track not only, you know, health-related issues, but how much the general public knows about them. Is that fair?
Correct. MDVIP is a national network of primary care physicians who really focus on personalized preventive care. So that's why we did this survey. We wanted to really understand what Americans knew about heart attacks and their risk for heart attacks.
All right. So the survey in question, and for some of the listeners may remember that we spoke with Dr. Clemis in June of last year, and we were talking about the fat IQ and how much do people really know about weight and weight loss and all that. Well, this one is the heart attack IQ quiz. And like, how many people got this quiz? Was this a big, like a lot of folks?
Yeah, over 1,000 people took the survey. And the sad part is 62% failed the survey.
Ow. 62% failed, like F, like you're gonna have to take that class again.
Yes, and in fact, like nobody got an A. So the rest of the 40% were between B and D.
Wow. That's a tough curve. So what? Why? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, we know, generally people know that heart attack kills, heart disease kills more Americans than anything, right? Or do they not know that?
Actually, they do. The survey did show that 70% of people knew that heart disease was a killer. Over 60% said they knew the risk factors and they knew their risk factor. But again, 62% failed the quiz, so there's a disconnect here, which is what we wanted to figure out. I think the main disconnect that's important is that 75% of people said that they knew that cholesterol was the cause. They thought cholesterol was the main cause of a heart attack. But in fact, most heart attacks happen in people with a normal cholesterol level. Inflammation is that other piece of the puzzle that they didn't really know a lot about.
All right. So talk to us a little bit about inflammation, because I'm sure the concept is vaguely familiar to people, but I'm not sure they really understand what it means.
Sure. Well, an acute inflammation is probably very familiar. You get a splinter, the area in your finger gets big and red and swollen because your body is trying to wall off that splinter and push it out, right? That's acute inflammation. Chronic inflammation happens when you smoke, you're overweight, back to our fat IQ survey, you have diabetes that's uncontrolled. All of that chronic inflammation, you could even have inflammation in your mouth, periodontal disease. That makes your body more prone to build up plaque in the arteries. I think most people know about plaque and cholesterol building up in your artery. But what happens is the body, because of that chronic inflammation, goes to wall off that plaque, kind of like they wall off the splinter. But if that plaque is irritated from that chronic inflammation, it can break open. And just like when you cut yourself shaving, you know, you get that clot, the same thing happens in your artery. And that's what clogs the artery and causes that heart attack or stroke.
So it's clotting as a result of inflammation.
Yes, which is why we need to decrease our inflammation in our body, plus decrease your cholesterol, because the cholesterol is the original thing that builds up the plaque.
Ah, okay. So it's not, so it's sort of like the trigger that begins a process that leads to the inflammation, which leads to the clot, which leads to the heart attack.
You got it, Russell.
Well, it's not that complicated, but I can see where people misunderstand. They think the cholesterol itself is the cause. It's not exactly the cause, but it's definitely a factor.
Correct. I mean, the question and the survey, I don't really want to get into too many of them because I want everybody to go take the quiz, But the question was, do you have a heart attack when cholesterol just builds up so much it blocks the artery, kind of like your drain gets clogged? And that's not what usually happens.
But that apparently is the common public perception of what happens.
It is. I mean, other misperceptions we found in the survey were things like all fat is bad. It's not. There are good fats, like in salmon or nuts, that actually, in moderation, can help you prevent a heart attack.
Avocados, I'm told.
Yes.
So, in fact, one of these satellite tours was about avocados, and man, they wouldn't talk about anything else. I was like, people cannot just eat avocados. But you mentioned a couple others. Salmon's really good. That what is that stuff called? The fish oil. I mean, it's called fish oil, but there's a more technical term for it. I can't think of it.
EPA
Omega.
And
omegas.
Yes, omega fatty omegas, yes. So fish oil is a good way to get some of that, but using good fats like salmon and fish is probably an even better way to get that in your body.
Right, because the jury's kind of out on whether those pills are very effective. Is that true, like the capsules of fish oil?
They are, and I think it's a lot of the capsules depends on how much you have. There's the omega-3s and the omega-6s. And so what is the ratio and what's the ratio in your body? In fact, there is even a blood test for that to understand what that ratio is in your body and do you have enough of the good omegas in your body to help protect you against heart disease.
All righty. So this poll, which was conducted by Ipsos, I believe, was conducted in November of last year, right around election time, actually, people were probably really tired of being polled, but that's okay. And were there any other results that were surprising?
There were. I think one of the other big ones was that only about 40% of people have proactively gone to their primary care physician to talk about this, and about the same number say that their physician proactively gave them guidance on things to change for their heart attack risk. So I think this is a huge opportunity, making sure your primary care physician will partner with you. That's why at MDVIP, we have the time, the tools for these physicians, and we have several amazing ones in Tulsa, Oklahoma, for the physicians to sit down with you and really spend the time, know what your inflammatory markers are, know what your cholesterol is, and then make that plan to decrease those levels.
Now, one of the figures that that really kind of caught my eye in the information that was sent before this interview was that roughly 80% of heart attacks and strokes are preventable.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the number one killer, and yet it could be number five or six pretty easy if only more was done in terms of prevention. True?
Very true. And that's why, you know, that's why I'm doing this. This is why MDVIP really exists. Physicians, it was built by doctors for doctors, for physicians to be able to help partner with their patients better, to help them decrease risks for heart disease, diabetes, strokes. So education is really one of the key factors for people to even know to go to their primary care doctor to help them prevent this.
And what I'm hearing over and over is prevention, and that is sort of a new paradigm, is it not, in the medical field? It used to be you got sick, you go to the doctor. Now it's you go to the doctor to try to prevent yourself from being sick, and that seems to be a much better plan to me.
Yeah, I mean, actually, that's why I'll say in other interviews, you know, the healthcare system is neither healthy nor caring. For years, we've sort of gone on the putting Band-Aids on acute problems as opposed to trying to prevent those problems from happening in the first place. But it's hard because it takes a lot of time for a physician to talk to you about, you know, what exercise is best for you and you'll continue to do and it will work in your life. You know, what are your sleep patterns? You know, identify really what are your barriers. I think we probably talked about this 6 months ago. You know, you travel a lot and you eat out. So how do you pick the best choices while you're eating out to make sure that you don't gain weight and that you don't increase your inflammation? Those are all things that a physician needs time to talk to you about. And today, many physicians don't have that time.
We could go for hours about our broken healthcare system. I wish we had more time, but I know you don't. So let me ask you this. You want more people to come out and take this quiz and sort of get a baseline, if you will, on their knowledge about heart disease. How do we take the heart attack IQ quiz?
Right. Please, everybody go to mdvip.com/heartattackIQ and take the quiz, and you get the answers and you get tools to help you, and so you can get more educated.
Dr. Andrea Clemis with the organization called MDVIP. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.